Psychopath and sociopath are often used interchangeably in common speech to describe a person who is pathologically prone to criminal or violent behaviour and who lacks any regard for the feelings or interests of others and any feelings of remorse or guilt for their crimes. Both fall under the umbrella of antisocial personality disorder. Female psychopaths are somewhat unusual. Estimates are 0.3 or 0.7 of the world's population, with males being around 1%. Female serial killers who are psychopaths are even rarer. Psychopaths are born, not made, and the horrific childhood was no defence when charged with murder of not one, but two men. But are there more victims? This is the case of Sheila LaBarre, and this is Murder Me on Monday.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the Murder Me on Monday podcast. I'm Cameron, and joined with me is Mother.
Hello.
And a big shout out to Linda G for upping the patron tier. Appreciate it very much, thank you. Where can they get this stuff that's our Patreon and showing support and giving me money?
Via patreon.com, where you can get early access and exclusive content and stickers should you want them, which we're still working on for the new ones. Please do consider it. Link in our bio, and thank you to all our current supporters. But if you can't sign up, we understand, but leaving a review is good too. So thank you for all that have done that.
We've made a joke about it being my nipple, and you showed me a template that you'd made earlier, and there was like six nipples in the picture. I'm not a fucking cow. The whole joke was it would be my nipple, not this weird thing that you've got.
I've got no artistic leanings whatsoever.
A nipple's so pretty circular, right? And the template for the sticker is a circle. It's not that hard.
You'd be surprised how difficult it is to get a picture it's of a nipple. You can't. You can't. Oh, one other thing. Reviews. I found one this week. I got told off for talking too fast.
You got told off for talking too fast.
Yes. I spent too much time with you, haven't I?
I'm surprised people don't do 0.8 times speed when we talk, especially me.
I think the problem is, for me sometimes, when we're together, because it's just you and I in the room with the microphones, you forget about the audience. And I drop into the, was it lingua franca that we grew up with? And it's speed talking. And I know other people that have been around us when we've done it
can struggle to understand us, yeah.
Yeah, it's very odd. But yeah, let's get into this week's case. There's so much research and the usual sorting through what's right and what's wrong. Lack of clarity as per usual around some stated facts, but I picked it up because it was very different to how male psychopaths operate. And I saw a picture of a victim shortly before he was murdered. It was heartbreaking due to the level of obvious abuse he'd suffered. Yet even if he had told people, would anyone have believed him? The press tends to ignore that diagnosis of psychopathy that was made at trial. Instead, they use her childhood nickname of Firecracker. They also call her a Black Widow, even a gold-digging angel of vengeance, taking retribution out on paedophiles. Problem was, there was no evidence of any of her allegations, and it's much more likely that it became her excuse or justification, or possibly her personality disorders taking full control. Let us start on the 4th of July 1958, when Sheila K. Bailey was born in Fort Payne, Alabama, pretty small southern town. That birth date is obviously the start of the nickname Firecracker, but she did grow into a rather striking young woman who entered beauty pageants and dreamed of becoming a model or even a country music singer. I've actually got no idea if she can sing. Sheila was the youngest of six children. Her father was a violent alcoholic, no surprise there, and he would sexually abuse her and some of her siblings and even brought his mates around to join in the fun. Of course, no one ever reported anything. Somehow or another, she manages to graduate high school in 1976. Shortly afterwards, she then marries her first husband, a chap called Ronnie. Exact date is unknown and the divorce date is unknown. There are stories out there that it lasted only a couple of weeks when her husband found Sheila had locked his toddler son or toddler daughter from a previous relationship in a cupboard. She may have been 23 and the husband may have been 19. If that's true, It's a pattern. She goes for younger. Early 1980s, there were one, if not two, suicide attempts. And Sheila's sister later said in court that Sheila had told her that when she'd been sectioned in a hospital, an orderly had attempted to sexually assault her. Unfortunately, we all know that this is not uncommon, and we all know why people don't report it. But we obviously do not know that if this is true in Sheila's case.
I recently found out why morgues hire women, not men.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's David Fuller, that episode we did on him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's often in the press as a mortician. He wasn't. He was an electrician.
he just worked in there.
Yeah, spent a lot of time in the morgue. 1981. Sheila obviously manages to get divorced because there's no hint of bigamy when in January she marries a chap called John. Yet again, that marriage doesn't last and gets divorced in 1982. Divorced twice by the age of 24. There's probably one long-standing affair that went on for a number of years also, but that's lost in the mists of people's memories and stories. Sheila's working life was not extensive. Worked at a motel, doing what I don't know, and also as an assistant administrator at a nursing home, which is possibly where she gets the idea for her next move. In 1987, she responds to a Lonely Hearts advert placed by a very wealthy chiropractor called Dr. Wilfred Joseph Labar, who was known as Bill.
Sorry, I've got to say, and he may turn out to be a victim, so I feel bad for saying it, but you're not a doctor, you're a chiropractor. You don't go to medical school. I could call myself a doctor. Chiropractic medicine was designed around curing ailments like deafness and blindness by manipulating the spine. The guy who invented it was murdered by his son, who was a magnetic healer. The whole thing's a con. They just employ like physiotherapy stuff to backs, and that's why it helps it. Or they sublux a joint where they click it and it feels better. But it doesn't help. You're not a doctor. Bet he's minted, so respect.
I'm not going
to
argue.
I ain't chucking flame at him because he may not be a victim yet. We don't know. We don't know what the vibe is, but I just had to say that.
Well, he was at that time 61 years old. He was divorced from his first wife after 22 years, with whom he had two children. His second wife, who apparently was the love of his life, later died of cancer. Bill lived on a 15-acre farm in a place called Epping, New Hampshire. He was estimated to be worth something in the region of $2 million. Bill obviously liked Sheila's letter. Or maybe it was the nudes or erotic pictures she sent him.
Yeah, that'll do it.
But in no time at all, Sheila had uprooted herself and moved nearly 1,200 miles to move in with Bill. We don't know if Bill didn't want to marry her or perhaps her two previous attempts had put her off wedding cake, but they never did make it official.
I would err on the side of Bill there. Yes. If she's been so prone to marry, now she's got a rich dude who has a positive history of marriage in the sense that he was happily married and then unfortunately they passed away. And why wouldn't she want to get the tendrils in to say, well, if he does die, I definitely get the money. If she's going to get married to people that don't have that in the first place, it doesn't seem to make sense to me. If that's her MO, that doesn't make sense to me. So in my mind, it's going to be Bill that's done it. He might have picked some weird career choices being a chiropractor, but turned out well to make money. I don't think he's stupid.
I agree with you. But this is a small place, Epping. There's only about 7,500 people live there. And she took to telling everybody locally that they had to call her Mrs. Labar.
You probably don't have the answer to this. I almost called it surgery. Is this practice set up in there as well?
Not in that.
I was going to say, because it's so tiny, that can't be a good place to set one up.
No, but he did have a complete separate chiropractic clinic. Yeah. Sheila may well have gotten bored by the 22nd of August 1995, 7 years after moving in with Bill, because she decides to marry someone else. A chap called Wayne, who was a Jamaican citizen living in a place at the time called York.
Oh, so she just sort of abandoned Bill?
No, it's not as black and white as that. This place he was living was York in Maine, and but it's actually only 13 miles away from the farm. It was a different state, but she's still living with Bill. How did she meet him? He lived and worked at the farm for a while. So she leaves Bill at the farm and goes and marries this Wayne and moves into his apartment.
And he's a farmhand almost.
He had been, yeah. I have questions about her money, but this is a whole other argument. She divorces Wayne in 1996. Another short-lived marriage, about 16 months, I think. Apparently, Wayne wasn't amenable to finding Sheila in bed with another man. And when confronted, the other guy, whomever he was, held him down while Sheila hit him about the head with a phone. 1997, Sheila gets a restraining order against Wayne.
But she's the one...
I know.
Why doesn't he get one against her?
I know. The wording of this divorce application and the restraining order is odd. Sheila implied that Wayne was sexually assaulting her, yet no children had come from it. It was the implication that...
It's of like no POV, I imagine.
It was odd. Bill even knew what she was doing to Wayne, and Bill gave Wayne some money to get away from Sheila. He was told to buy a bus ticket and basically get the hell out of Dodge. Sheila was also not adverse to chasing Bill about the farm, frequently arguing and shouting, waving a gun at him, and according to neighbours, spent one evening shooting at him from a distance, so he had to go and hide in a local orchard and spent the night there. She actually asked Wayne to kill Bill, so she could get to keep the farm. Wayne, to his credit, actually told one of Bill's children, who was long grown up, and this daughter managed to get a restraining order against Sheila to keep her away from her father. You may wonder why she was able to do that. There was the matter of the frequent police call-outs to Bill's farm. These call-outs, more and more frequent. Sheila's behaviour was a problem. Not only was she abusive to Bill, who was getting on in years, which doesn't ever seem to have been taken seriously by authorities. It's a form of elder abuse. But she would flirt so outrageously with any police officer that attended. In the end, the house was marked as requiring two officers to any call out.
They're concerned about the police officer getting molested, aren't they?
Yes. She would basically either be in lingerie, semi-naked. She would drape herself over any man that came across. That restraining order was for a year. And as far as I can tell, Sheila never actually lived at the farm again.
Just to clarify, is the restraining order from Bill to Sheila, or was it from the daughter to Sheila, and therefore the daughter... I'm wondering if there's a way to circumvent whether or not Bill wanted one or not. And then if the daughter then lives at Bill's house, that means Sheila can't go there. I'm just wondering, is there any sort of change in circumstance?
There's no clarity around that. It was the fact it was to keep Sheila away from the farm and Bill. So maybe she was... How she was able to do that, I've got no idea. It's hidden. There's no paperwork out there.
I mean, it's pushing back like 30 years, isn't it? 34 years.
Sheila was one who could not be on her own. She started another fling.
Yeah, she's been married, but 8 times.
She started another fling with another unsuspecting chap, which blew up in September 1998 at his apartment and resulted with the guy having a significant cut across his forehead by the time the police showed up. She'd done worse. She'd fired guns at him, battered his teeth out, and even managed to get a power of attorney over him, no idea how, and manipulate the court system so well, she got off scot-free every single time. Bill had seemingly had enough. She scared him. He tried to get rid of her previously. He bought her a house back in Tennessee, but Sheila just wouldn't go. All of this ended rather abruptly on the 2nd of December 2000, when at the age of 74, Bill dies of a heart attack. He was taken to the funeral home and swiftly cremated. When asked for a copy of the marriage certificate by the undertaker, Sheila responded she didn't have one. She was his common law wife, and it was all the same. But she did have a gun and she knew how to use it. The death certificate was swiftly issued, although the undertaker denied later that the exchange took place. But there were other witnesses who did corroborate that Sheila had said that and had basically threatened the undertaker. Common law. It's not much use in the UK anymore. Not really a thing for unmarried partners, although people think it is. It's all about what you've put into a property in a relationship materially. But it seems it's a thing in New Hampshire, as Sheila's discovered she could use it to get away with an awful lot by shouting about it. Whilst he was alive, it didn't make much difference. But once he was dead...
He could contest it while he's alive. So they could, she could just say, well, no, well, I've kind of forced myself into his life for the past 20 years or whatever. So I am by all accounts, his common-law wife. And people are like, no, she's harassing me. I've got restraining orders. That when he's dead, he can't defend that or he can't argue it.
You on the button there. Well, Bill's will didn't help. It pretty much left everything, the farm, the horses, the chiropractic clinic, two other houses, all to Sheila. Nothing to his children. There were also a number of local lawsuits. Sheila didn't want to pay taxes on the property. She physically threatened court officials, yet nothing happened to her. She scared the bejesus out of Bill's children, who, after finding out the costs of trying to fight the will, which they believed had been signed by Bill under duress, gave up. They would have to put $50,000 down to even start the case. And if she won it...
$50K back then?
Yeah. It's civil.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. Sheila got everything. The prize at the end of the rainbow. But of course, she couldn't live quietly afterwards. Sheila just had to have a man to bully. The farm was 15 acres, I said, a biggish place. It needed help to manage. And one of these people who helped was Michael Deloge, known as Mikey. He had a sad background. He'd married young, had a child young, got involved with drugs and alcohol, etc. He predictably got divorced and he wanted a fresh start. But with few skills, he eventually moved in 2003 from his home state of Connecticut to New Hampshire and ended up in a homeless shelter where he met Sheila, who dropped in looking for farmhands. Mikey probably struggled with the work. He was quite slight in frame, the drugs and alcohol having done a number on him. But that made Sheila's plan easier. He was less likely to fight back.
Sheila going to the homeless shelter just feels incredibly predatory. There's people that are in a poor financial situation that are vulnerable, addicted to substances. And she's there saying, I'll come here, I can give you money. And they're frail. So
It's horrible. It's horrible. And she was allowed to do it. Sheila swept Mikey off his feet. He was in love with this whirlwind of a woman only a few years older than he was. Mikey would have been around 38 and Sheila about 46 at this time. She was his new girlfriend. Summer 2004. Mikey's family hadn't heard from him in a long time, but his stepmother got a call from Sheila. She was quoting scripture at the poor woman, saying Mikey had sexually assaulted his siblings as children and how could his stepmother allow this to happen? The poor woman was baffled. And then his father got a letter supposedly from Mikey admitting to the abuse and they were just all confused. But there's nothing anywhere to say that they reported their concerns, even though Mikey's siblings categorically denied that anything untoward had ever happened. February 2005, Mikey sent a letter to his mother, basically telling her never call the farm again, and she was the problem, his mother. So he's isolated. Sheila has successfully cut Mikey off from his support, hasn't she?
Is it even Mikey that sent these letters?
Yes, it was his handwriting.
It was his handwriting. That doesn't mean he sent it, does it?
No, she could have been stood over him with a bat in her hand.
For some reason, in my head, because the pictures I've got here, I see her as being like 7 foot tall for some reason.
Mm. She was 5 foot five, by the way.
She's not even tall, but in one of the pictures, she looks it. So I'm just picturing this massive woman that's scaring these men that are addicted to drugs.
Yeah, she's only 5 foot five. Over the winter period of 2004-2005, Mikey is spotted by neighbours by the farm, badly beaten, just walking the roads. When asked what had happened to him, he repeated one word, Sheila. He makes it back to the homeless shelter. Yet again, no one reported anything to anyone about the state he was in, and they did not step in when Sheila turned up at the shelter and took him back to the farm. March 2005, Sheila takes some sort of small claims court action against Mikey, saying he owed her $5,000. Somehow or another, that is settled out of court, with Mikey agreeing that he owed her the money and he would pay her an additional $500 if he didn't settle this $5,000 debt, and he signs papers. Sheila then takes him to the bank, his bank. She makes him add her to his personal bank account, so it becomes a joint account.
This almost sounds like trafficking.
Yes. You're not wrong. You're really not wrong there.
You've made someone insular. You've taken them away from where they are. You're taking over their finances. You're getting them indebted to you, so they have to stay with you. It's not far off a pimp.
No.
He's been a victim of abuse. He's been slapped up. He's been damaged. People have witnessed that. How is that not reported? And then for to say, oh, yeah, he owes me $5,000. Is there any evidence of that? Probably not. Because if he's working on the farm, surely it's like, well, are you even paying me? Probably not. He's probably getting paid in food and housing or whatever. Well, I guess in his head, it's a relationship, isn't it? But for her, it's just a victim.
It's a transaction thing. Yeah. Sheila liked to tape conversations.
I thought you were going to say tape him there and then hit him. Sorry.
She might well have done. She liked to you know, the old-fashioned cassette tapes. And there's a lot more about that that comes up later. But she's got Mikey on tape. She subjected him to an interrogation about this imaginary abuse of his siblings, which he freely admits, even though it never happened. On that same tape, Sheila accuses him of engaging in incest with his own mother, which again never happened.
Do you reckon she's projecting because she's from Alabama?
You've said
I've waited 20 minutes to make a joke about Alabama.
You said the quiet words out loud. I was thinking, right. Sheila then sends out letters to the bank telling them to take Mikey off the joint bank account, which was his to start with, and sending notes to, supposedly signed by Mikey, to the postal authorities telling them not to deliver anything to the farm addressed to him because he was no longer living there. He recorded these notes. No one sees Mikey again. February 2006, Sheila needs a new supply. She returns to the personal ads, this time telephone dating lines to be exact.
When you say supply, do you mean income or victim?
Victim supply.
I was going to say, she's got this big old house now and various marriages that have fallen apart. She should be... Does she still have that house in Tennessee as well?
Well, it was
Bill bought her, so she must do. So she's not doing bad for money. Not being funny, but you've air quote won. What are you still doing? This is just for fun.
Yes, absolutely. She's on this telephone dating lines. Yeah,
this is 2005, right?
2006. You were far too young to remember these things, but I do remember these telephone lines. Yeah, very odd. You'd ring up, and it would almost be like a promo of somebody, and if you liked the sound, I remember people, friends doing them, you liked the sound of their intro, you press the button and you'd get put through to actually talk to them. Or it's the equivalent of swiping left, swiping right, but it was on the telephone line.
Antiquated, different world, isn't it? Different world.
At the age of 48, Sheila meets Kenneth County, known as Kenny, who was then aged 24. Kenny was a nice lad with some learning difficulties, it seems. Far too trusting for sure, and certainly not capable of fending off Sheila. He swiftly moves onto the farm, ostensibly as a farmhand. May have even been a sexual plaything for Sheila. Who knows? She lies. 24th of February 2006. Kenny's mother was made of sterner stuff than some. She called the police and told them that Kenny had basically been kidnapped. Police knew exactly where he was. After all, they'd been called to that farm on many occasions.
As Sheila poked the mama bear that she shouldn't have done.
Yeah. So police toddle off to the farm. Sheila refuses to open the door, speaks to them through a window. She denies Kenny was there. They tell her they have a missing persons report, and he was there. She admitted that he was. They then asked to speak to Kenny. She refuses, says he's in the bath. He's naked. Well, you would be naked if you were in the bath, but she specifically brought up the term that he was naked in the bath. The police tell Sheila they can't leave without speaking to Kenny. So she brings Kenny to the door. Kenny tells the police he's fine and they're of his own free will. Sheila tells the police to leave. 26th of February, Sheila rings the police, tells them she wants a copy of this missing persons report and she will sue any one of them if they come out to the farm.
Good luck trying to sue the police. You can't do that now.
17th of March, there are pictures taken of Kenny at a Walmart with Sheila. Now, the reason that that picture sticks in my memory, and I'm sure it may have for others, is that Kenny is in a wheelchair hugging two large...
Oh, there is a wheelchair. I thought that was a mobility scooter. If I could get one going around Tesco's, I would, but I can't. I thought he was in a mobility scooter just so he didn't have to, but no, he is in a wheelchair and he's got these two big IBC container things that would be full of, like...
Yeah.
Cleaner.
He's beaten black and blue. There are cuts all over his face, his hands. The skin is grey in colour. The man is in a bad way, but he's still half smiling for the camera.
I've got a picture of Kenny above that, and then I've got a picture of Kenny in the Walmart. I thought they were separate people, partly because his face is swollen. He looks like a boxer. I've been around combat sports. He has the bruising under the eye, the bruising over the nose. It looks like he's been in a fight.
Those big containers, I believe... The story is that she tells everybody that they're to buy diesel. I'm presuming there must be a petrol station or something within this Walmart.
You wouldn't be using plastic, though. You'd be using a jerry can. It might be different for diesel, but I don't know why you'd be using a plastic, because it would leach.
Well, that's, again, the story might be wrong. Can we just to say fuel in that respect? Because it actually would then feed into what happens later. Okay, so you've got that picture of him sat there with those two cans on his lap. The staff at Walmart were concerned for Kenny. Sheila had created a drama. She said somebody had pushed Kenny or something like that, and she demanded this and demanded a usual thing. The staff called the police because the state that Kenny was in. But as per usual, Sheila talked her way out of it. She said that he was her husband and they were just shopping, and his physical state was after a crash in a car and there was no need to worry. The police actually tried to speak to Kenny to check if he was okay. You know, the usual, you don't speak to a victim in front of the abuser. But Sheila got in the middle, told Kenny not to speak to the officers, and the police watched as Sheila put Kenny in her vehicle and drove away. Sheila twice called the police in March to complain how they had treated her at that Walmart and to tell them then that Kenny had left the farm. Kenny's mother gets back in contact with the police. She says Kenny hadn't come home with her and he wouldn't have nowhere to go, and with his learning difficulties, he was vulnerable and they needed to find him. The police didn't go back out to the farm. They called Sheila and left messages asking her to tell them where Kenny had gone.
I'm starting to blame the police here.
Sheila, and in my view predictably, blew her own world apart by calling the police on the 24th of March 2006.
How many instances of it where a social worker goes to a house 20, 30, 40 times, clear evidence of abuse, they tick box, done, go home. Year later, kid's dead. Social worker goes, oh, we had no idea what was happening.
I know.
You've had like 50 instances of police. She knows them by first name.
Yeah.
When she calls to complain, the police chief goes, oh, it's Sheila again.
Yeah.
Because she's there every other day.
You're not wrong. I don't want to give something away that I'll bring up later. So Sheila rings the police. She played the police a tape she had made of her interrogating Kenny.
Why would that mean anything? Because if it's just a tape, I could give you a script to read and you not know that it's me recording it.
I know.
That doesn't mean anything.
But this is, by now, her personality disorders, her obsessive need for power, control, taking over anything. She has to be in charge. And she now has to be proved right. She, over this tape, she's telling Kenny that she is a justice of the police. And he has to admit that he sexually assaulted children. Kenny, on the tape, is terrified and probably badly injured, and he is heard admitting to these imaginary acts. Sheila accuses him of these imaginary acts. Kenny is terrified, probably badly injured, but is heard on the tape admitting to all of this and is heard to vomit through pain or fear we do not know. It takes police 5 hours after that phone call from Sheila where she played that tape to get out to the farm. They don't get any response knocking at the door, but they do find a big old burn pile in the middle of the lawn with debris and a bone with some type of flesh attached to it. They call this in and are told that they have the authority to do a wellness check, and another officer arrives to help. They kick the door down, only for Sheila to arrive soon after, walking from the direction of the road. She shows them around the house. They see nothing except a pair of trainers in the basement, which Sheila says are Kenny's. But no, they can't take them. As they go to leave, they ask her about the burn pit and the bone. She says that she cremates pet rabbits there. It is pointed out that the bone is far too big for a rabbit, and she blurts out, "Well, it's either a rabbit or a paedophile." The police are, "What the fuck, paedophile?" And she goes, "I never said that." Predictably, she refuses them permission to take the bone with them and tells them that they have to leave. They go back to the precinct and it's all hands to the pump. No one believes a word she has said, and a search warrant is issued.
Could she even deny them that?
Yeah, they haven't got.
I know it's on her property, but if it's a bone pile, could that not be then argued that it's considered refuse? So someone puts something in the bin, it's freely accessible by police, isn't it?
Only if it's outside the property.
Only if it's outside the property, okay. Mm.
Yeah, yeah, that's it. Why they didn't leave one of them beside this burn pit with his gun, because one of them had a shotgun, guarding it while they went back to the pre, I don't know. But they get a warrant and Sheila can no longer throw them off the farm while they take items. By the 2nd of April 2006, Sheila is under arrest for first degree murder, and the police and various agencies spend 3 weeks tearing that farm apart. They find Mikey's birth certificate at the farm and his wallet in a septic tank, and other pieces of bone that were identified as human, not rabbit, as Sheila claimed. They also find 3 human toes that, to this day, have not been matched to anyone. They're not Kenny's, and they're not Mikey's. They find hundreds of tapes where Sheila had recorded these unsuspected men on those dating lines. Whilst Kenny may have suffered with what I'd call, I've used the term learning difficulties, he had actually never been diagnosed, and most people, including family, just described him as slow. But he had actually joined the army for a while, and they had his DNA on record, and they were able to trace that back to the remains that they found at the farm. Turns out on the 21st of March, shortly before all of this, Sheila had stabbed Kenny. She dismembered him and then burnt his body and mattress on that burn pit the police saw at the front of the farm. Those 2 canisters that Kenny is holding in his lap in that photograph that contained some sort of fuel are believed to have been placed on top of his body and set on fire, which caused the burn pit. June 2008. This all goes to trial. Sheila pleads not guilty by reason of insanity, but admits that there was plenty of evidence against her. Her own lawyer described her as very, very sick. A man named James testifies that he was in a 6-year abusive relationship with her. Where he fitted into the timeline, I have got no idea. He only pops up in court and there's nothing to make any sense. Apparently, she took him on trips to places like Jamaica and such like. She spent money on him. But where she got the money, unless Bill was giving her an allowance, I don't know. Wilfred, that Jamaican chap she'd married for 16 months, who'd been deported in 2002 for overstaying his visa, he had actually contacted the police, written them a letter, and he came and testified to all that she had done to him and how Sheila had asked him to kill Bill.
Were they deported during their marriage?
No, it was afterwards.
Do you reckon she'd reported him?
Put it past her. The jury is shown interview tapes where in February of 2006, Sheila admits to killing Kenny. But there is one from March when she says she has got no idea what happened to him. She went to sleep and when she woke up, he was gone. She had actually taken with her what could be described as a support rabbit to the police station when being interviewed and is sat there stroking it whilst answering questions.
That's normal.
Yeah.
That's normal. That's like if the police leave the room and you stare at the camera for 2 hours and don't blink. That's not normal.
She contradicts herself constantly. She claimed Kenny had changed his name to Adam. Again goes on about the sexual abuse that these men had supposedly perpetrated against children, siblings, and such like.
By now, everyone's realised that are listening to this that she's hard projecting her sexual assaults that she experienced as a kid onto other people, getting them to admit it, and then enacting vengeance on them. But she's doing it to seemingly vulnerable people, so she herself is perpetuating that cycle. I know it happens, and it's super common. She probably wouldn't be able to do it to someone that isn't vulnerable in the first place. Even Bill, I've conflated rich with competent, intelligent, and secure. He's an older guy, has money, lost his wife. He wants to seek partnership, doesn't he? And he's found this, what he considered attractive woman in Sheila, and it's kind of just steamrolled from there.
Initially, Bill and Sheila, yes, but then obviously...
She stuck her tendrils in, because Bill could just leave, because he got her to fuck off and bought her a house in Tennessee.
But she wouldn't go.
And she manipulated herself to be in his life where he feels like he can't do it. And in no way am I blaming Bill, like, obviously.
But she never, ever accuses Bill of anything untoward. And
do you think it's because he has the money to fight it as well, if he did?
And he's older.
Yeah. I was going to ask, when she was younger, she's going for seemingly older guys. And then when she got a little bit older...
No.
Because Sheila was right about the same age as Mikey, and Kenny was the only one that was younger, significantly, wasn't it?
Yes.
So at that point, I'm wondering, as she's getting older, she now can't go for older guys, because they're pushing 100. So she's got to go for the younger guys.
But when she was younger, the first marriage, it was possible that guy was 4 years younger than her as well. And I think it's a pattern that she perpetuated apart from Bill.
So Bill's the outlier.
Bill's the outlier. And Bill, as you said, is wealthy. So he could have possibly... fought her on it. Oh, remember Mikey? Remember Sheila accusing his mother of abusing him?
And his siblings and everyone else. And the siblings are like, what the fuck? That didn't happen.
She played the same trick with Kenny, Sheila did. She even had Kenny report his own mother for abusing him, even though it didn't happen. Mentioned that childhood abuse. A sister told the court of 2 occasions where that had happened. But also that Sheila, in later years... was ringing her sister daily, saying people had stolen from her. She could talk to a man and know that he was a paedophile. There was, every day there was a litany of so-and-so stealing stuff from my farm, so-and-so's taking this. I only have to talk to a man for a couple of minutes and I know immediately that he's a paedophile. It is possible that this came from one of her suicide attempts when she was younger. Apparently, according to a book written about this, she swallowed a bottle of pills, got into a car and drove until she passed out at the wheel and then crashed it. And she spends more than a week in a coma in hospital. When she awoke, she claimed that she had died and found herself seated at a table with various men, all with long beards. Sheila insisted that one of the men was God. She said that she was told by God that her work on earth was not through and returning her to life under orders to kill paedophiles, to kill perverts like the men who had hurt her when she was little. The defence psychiatrist testified that she had schizoaffective disorder and delusional disorder. He explained that the schizoaffective disorder identifies someone who has a mixture of a mood disorder like depression or mania, together with the disorder of thinking and reality testing, and they can't think in a rational way. Well, I think she's proved that, didn't you? He said that both the thinking disorder and the mood disorder have a life of their own, something shown up together and sometimes separate. And in Sheila's case, the delusional disorder is marked by paranoia, especially about paedophiles. And that Sheila's delusions led her to believe that every man, particularly those in her life, with the exception of Bill, were paedophiles. And he testified that he didn't think Sheila appreciated the moral wrongness of her actions. He said, at one level, she viewed herself as ridding society and protecting herself from some danger, protecting society from the danger of paedophilia. And on another level, she understood the illegality of her actions and tried to cover them up, but in a disorganized fashion, indicative of her disorder. So I sat there when I read that thinking, so she knew it was illegal. She cannot be insane would be the test usually, wouldn't it? If you know something's illegal.
Just because something's illegal doesn't mean it's morally correct.
No, but the insanity part of it. Usually if someone's insane, they don't know the difference between right and wrong. They don't know the difference.
Again, difference between right and wrong and what's legal. They're being conflated. They're not always mutually... They're not synonymous. They can be exclusive, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, I guess you're right to a degree. The prosecution psychologist had a very different view of Sheila, of course. He had read more than 8,000 pages in the case file. He had interviewed Sheila 3 times and spending more than 12 hours with her. It's still not a lot, though, is it? He said that Sheila showed signs of paraphilia.
Did she accuse him of being a paedophile as well in this 12-hour exchange? Probably.
This was displayed in her obsession with paedophilia and other sexual acts that society deems as perverse. There is also evidence that she had a number of personality disorders that made her paranoid and unable to feel any empathy for others, which we've agreed is right. And these mood disorders are severe and can cause her to be psychotic at times. And they are displayed in hearing voices, seeing visions and having delusional thoughts. But, he says, she's not psychotic all the time. And not everything she does is psychotic. Basically, he said, she was a sadist as well as a psychopath. She liked inflicting pain. The judge had to stop proceedings when this psychologist was testifying about an interview in which she said she had killed Mikey because he was hurting and killing her animals. The psychologist suggested to the court that it was Sheila who was torturing and killing the animals, not Mikey. And Sheila had an absolute meltdown in court and she had to be removed.
The psychiatrist is considered an expert witness, mm-hmm. isn't he? So he can make that, even though he wasn't there to witness it, because due to him being an expert witness, he can extrapolate certain things and make judgment based on that, even though he wasn't directly there for the argument or have even witnessed it.
Correct.
I thought you were going to say the judge was like, hey, you can't do that. I'm like, no, we can. But no, if it's Sheila, if Sheila's going batshit mental, then yeah.
She's been accused of something that she didn't like being accused of, and she completely lost it, and the judge had either. Yeeted out of the courtroom for a bit. Remember me mentioning those tapes that the police found?
Like 100 of them?
Mm. They were illuminating. At different times, Sheila had claimed that she was a pilot, a nurse, an attorney, and a millionaire. The different people on conversations she recorded.
She might even be a millionaire by that point, though.
Well, yeah.
After the money from Bill and the houses and the property over time. Did she claim she's also law enforcement as well?
Yeah, she did with... Kenny.
Yeah.
She'd been recording these things since 1990, all the way up to 2006. To the many men she interacted with on this, it's actually now devolved into a telephone sex line. It wasn't a dating line. Telemates, apparently. She was known as Silver Leopard, Nova, Desire, and Black Widow. Conversations with these men and women. More than 1,000 hours of audio recordings included her coaxing men to talk about paedophilia, incest by their mothers, wanting a female lover for herself or a male lover for a boyfriend so she could watch. She also talked of wanting to adopt children for sexual purposes and engage in phone sex with a woman while someone else was in the room. So you've got hypersexualization constant, haven't you? Which can stem from this childhood abuse she did suffer from. But it's the sadism that's in there.
Do you think when she's in these weird, perverse fantasies talking to someone about the paedophilia, that it's trying to coax them into agreeing with it as well? So in her head, it's right that if she does meet them, she can kill them.
Yes.
Despite it being almost entrapment, almost.
Yes, that's 100% what it was. And some of these twits would have agreed with whatever she said because they were thinking they were going to get their end away, wouldn't they?
Yeah, because I'm just wondering if she's saying that because that's what she likes and then she doesn't want to admit that because people can often associate from what they're into versus what their morals are.
Mm-hmm.
Or is she trying to get them to agree with it? Because that way she is then just confirming in her head, no, all men are paedophiles.
Yes. Yeah. It's an echo chamber. She's created her own echo chamber, hasn't she? Either way, the jury did not believe her mental illness or personality disorders were enough to let her get away with it, unlike every other time she found herself up against authorities. After 13 hours, she was found guilty of the two murders, and on the 20th of June 2008 was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole twice, meaning she would have to overturn both convictions to be set free. 2010, she appeals. It's around the searches of the property that the reason she goes for it. That's denied. I can't figure out why, but she's serving her sentence in Florida City in Florida. She did start off in New Hampshire, but ended up in this facility in Florida. And she doesn't like it there at all.
It could be that she's upgraded her category. She could have been violent in prison and they don't have the correct...
You may actually have hit the nail on the head. I think those sentences were concurrent and I can't find anything that states that. But as recent as 2012, she was moaning to her sister, her lawyer and a local newspaper that if they would just move her to a prison in New Hampshire or Massachusetts, she would happily serve her sentences back to back without the chance of parole. Said it wasn't because she didn't like the weather down there. It was apparently because she was scared for her life. Payback. She claimed two female members of staff had abused her physically and psychologically. And I say again, payback. And I'm refraining from using the word I actually want to use. And according to her, it's all been covered up. A prison official said she wanted to transfer because she's been held under what they called close management. So probably fairly confined. And kept away from other prisoners after she'd had a violent altercation with another female convict. She's also denying about those random toes, which I still don't know if they are from one person or from three. She's saying that she's got nothing to do with any of it and there are no more bodies to be found and they have got no trace of the DNA.
That could even be just random homeless people she took back from the shelter, couldn't it?
Yeah.
Did she have pigs? Only horses, right?
Horses, yeah. Horses, okay. And rabbits.
Okay, she didn't feed them to pigs.
Yeah, but where these... And periodically the press... will put up an article going on about these three toes years after this case had finished. And everybody thinks it's all new and it's not. It's
the same three toes from
same
before.
Same three toes, yeah. Bill's farm that at one point may have been worth almost $900,000 falls into disrepair. It was targeted by vandals and just looked fit for pulling down when it was sold in May 2009 for $600,000. People who previously owned it before Bill wanted to buy it back, but it was sold to an unknown buyer via an attorney who represented them at auction. I did wonder where the proceeds went. I hope that went back to Bill's children, although I know his daughter was heavily involved in this case. His son, well, he died, possibly broken by all this drama. We know she killed Mikey and Kenny, but there is suspicion about Bill's death. He was 74. There was an autopsy. It listed his heart problems as cause of death, but there were no deep toxicology reports. Then again, Sheila was not known for her subtlety using poisons. She was very partial to violence. There was no hint of that in the autopsy report, but no one can check back because he was cremated. And we talked about she never accused Bill of being a paedophile. And there are also rumblings that there is maybe another will that had been found under floorboards at the house. And the will leaving everything to Sheila was a forgery, but it's kind of moot now because she's behind bars and she's not allowed to profit from it. So apparently psychopaths, even now, clinicians miss the signs. And even as recent as 2000s, most researched used men and assumed the findings would be the same for women. I've got no idea why. And it's actually only partially correct because we're not the same. Psychopaths are unable to form genuine emotional attachments to others. Everything is fake. Sociopaths are generally capable of doing it, but it's not a good relationship. And they're usually incapable of anything even remotely resembling a normal work or family life. Sociopaths are usually exceptionally impulsive and erratic. And they're more prone to rage or violent outbursts. And that's why when they do something criminal, it tends to be explosive rather than premeditated. There's no planning involved. And it's generally agreed that psychopaths, it's generally genetic or inherited. And notably, it's about the underdevelopments of parts of the brain responsible for emotional regulation and impulse control. Bluntly, psychopaths are born, sociopaths are made. My final thought, and I hate to say this, but her defence saying schizoaffective disorder, her age 2, she was late 40s, menopause, plus that they thought her disorders got worse as she got older, plus the pictures from when she was arrested, still a very striking looking woman, yet by the time the trial came about, yes, I know there are no beauty treatments in prison, but I did wonder if she was medicated as she'd put on a considerable amount of weight and quite frankly did look, in some of the pictures, she looked deranged. And the smirking got me wound up on videos. It could have all been part of the plan from the defence to, you know, pretend you're completely and utterly insane, they'll let you off, Sheila. People of a certain age think that Southern ladies with a certain vibe are like Blanche Devereux of the world, the Golden Girls. And she did have the charm, it said. But the violence, she was a predator. I do wonder if she used implements. There was talk about garden shears in some of the reports I read. Don't think she used her fists. She actually did, you know, pick up a plank and hit someone. This religious twist to it, this avenging angel, the meeting of God in her coma, there is nothing I can find that says in any way were they a religious family, that she was religious or even spiritual. So where that came from, brought up in the South, so maybe it's part and parcel of the way of life, how it's, like you say, it's social conditioning, maybe. I don't know. And there we have it, a rare female serial killer who is a psychopath. I can't even find anything to compare her to except Eileen Wuornos, which Cameron probably doesn't know the name.
No, I don't. I still don't know the name of that John West guy, whoever his name is. What's his name?
Fred West.
That one.
Fred West, yeah.
He's famous. I don't know who he is.
Yeah. Eileen Wuornos, yeah. She was a sex worker. She did it purely and simply to survive. She'd been abused, a horrific childhood. And she started killing the Johns. And she was executed for her crime. She did do wrong, but I'm not sure she should have been executed for it. I think she was a product of her environment as well. Finally, the victims who should not be forgotten. Michael Deloge, aged 38. Kenneth County, aged 24.
And that is the end of the show. Thank you very much. You can find our Patreon in the descriptions below. Find our Instagram at Murder Me Monday Podcast. Email us at murdermemondaypodcast@gmail.com. And we'll see you next time. Peace.
Bye.